representing the Free State.
Good morning, I'm Herman Groenewald, member of the committee and representing the Northwest Province.
Good morning, my name is O'Neill De Beer, a member of the committee and I'm representing the Western Cape.
Sanbona, Igamang Tikeni Patrick Sivan Bingfela in Mpumalanga Province. I'm a member of this committee.
Good morning, my name is Renal Barreto and I'm the researcher for the committee.
Good morning, my name is Sam from the Department of Public Enterprises.
Good morning, my name is Mohammed and I'm a non-executive director of SAFCOM.
Good morning, my name is Leslie, I'm senior manager at SAFCOM.
Good morning, my name is Patan Mkombo. I'm the acting deputy director general responsible for SAFCOM from DPE.
Good morning, my name is Mbali Shope and I'm from the Department of Public Enterprises.
Morning, my name is Dawudi, financial analyst, public enterprises.
Good morning, I'm Noma Kosazanachoma, committee assistant parliament.
Good morning, I'm Sindhu Sandavina from the committee section.
Good morning, I'm from PMG.
What is your name?
Name is Netemba Maaleni, I'm from PMG, thank you.
Good morning, I am Loli Sibisi, I am the committee secretary.
Now that we know each other, our agenda for today, number one, is consideration of the report and financial statements of the South African Forestry Company Limited, SAFCOM, for 2010-11, including the report of the independent auditors on the financial statement for 2010-2011. The second one will be the consideration on the committee report of the meeting that was held with the Department of Labor and Unemployment Insurance Fund on the 20th of June. The last one will be a consideration of minutes. Without any waste of time, can I invite SAFCOM to present to us hopefully what you're going to tell us is what is really happening in provinces. Thank you. Over to you.
Honourable Chairperson and honourable members of the committee, we'd like to thank you for providing this opportunity for us to give you feedback on the 2011 annual report. I would also like to thank the Department of Public Enterprises and the Deputy Director General as well as his colleagues for allowing us this opportunity. The acting CEO at present was unavailable to attend as she's pregnant and is not possible to fly at this point in time. And the chairperson is also unavailable at this point in time and I'm representing SAFCOM at this point in time.
Can I interrupt? You said the CEO, I understand the reason and the chairperson, what's the reason?
I think she's traveling abroad, if I'm not mistaken. Well, I'm not with her in the office. I'm down here in Cape Town. From what I was told, is that she's traveling abroad. You're just waiting for
it's not good enough, though. If an invitation was received, and the chairperson. So I understand the CEO, but they must give us an apology that will satisfy us as the committee to say the chairperson, 1, 2, 3. But if you, if you're not sure, we are really not satisfied with what you're telling us.
No. From what I've told, it has been forwarded to yourself and the chairperson, vice chairperson. Okay. Sorry, can you just give, we just have to get the presentation opened up. Will be, we'll just go through the mandate and strategic objectives of SAFCO, give you an idea of the core operations of the business and then some of the salient features of 2011, as well as governance and financial and commercial sustainability of the business, and just talk about some of the sustainable forestry management initiatives underway and the enhanced development contribution and then outlook and key risk and conclusion. The vision of SAFCOL is to be a world-class leading multi-forestry operation which straddles across communities and geographic boundaries. The mission is to develop a business which is sustainable and provides economic empowerment to the communities that are associated with the business and that live around the business and that can provide poverty alleviation and resolve also what's important for us is the issue of land claimants. The core value of the organization is based upon being passionate about the forests that we work with and the communities that are involved with the company, as well as being socially and environmentally conscious of what's taking place and the ever-evolving nature of the areas that we are working in. So if you look at the mandate and strategic objective of the organization, I think there's three legs to it, one being the financial and commercial sustainability. An important part of that leg of the mandate is to ensure that we generate sustainable returns for the shareholder and to manage the business in an ethical manner and preserve that the balance sheet of the business as well as the financial going concern of the business. From a forestry management point of view is to manage the forests in South Africa based upon the FSC, which is the Forestry Stewardship Council principles of managing forests, which ensure that they are sustainable and that they meet the applicable laws in Southern Africa as well as international independent certification. A key objective is trying to expand the amount of land that is currently under forestry, but considering that South Africa is an arid region in the world, one of the most arid regions, that's been proven to be a little bit more difficult. And then on the enhancement and development contribution side, you know, it's to play a leading role in transformation and trying to enact what is said in the forestry charter, and to have marketing policies that allow development of SMMEs to supply SAFCOL and to deal with black economic empowered firms and to facilitate new entrants into the market. And also to continue with the current number of socially responsible investments that we currently deal with, which are the community compacts that we have currently in place. The core of operations of SAFCOL largely sit with its two subsidiaries, Komatiland Forest, which cover the bulk of the South African operation, as well as Ifloma, which is the operations in Mozambique. The other companies that you see, the mountains, the oceans, and timber, etc., are dormant companies at this point in time, and we're looking to deregister them from the registrar of companies. In terms of the KLF being the major subsidiary within the group, its business is involved purely in forestry, and it's from the research center where things start off. We have a nurse, we have two or three nurseries where plants, trees are grown, and then we have processing where we have a sawmill, which is in the Timbadola sawmill, where we produce lumber, and we also have third-party agreements with Rinking, John Wright, Vineyard, and Emma Paluzzi with regard to processing of some of the wood which is produced at SAFCO. Yeah, just on the corporations, the way it works is we just have a research and development where groundbreaking research is done, that's put into a nursery where it's, plants are grown and tested, and those plants are then moved into the actual forest where they are planted, and from there then it's a long process of growing the trees to its full age, which involves in that process we need to look after them, have weed control, fire management, environmental management, pests and diseases. We need to thin and prune these trees, and then finally after many years these trees are harvested and then either processed by ourselves or a third party, or the logs are sold on to another processor who will produce lumber, which is used in predominantly in the South African construction industry. In terms of our own processing of the wood, it's an entire process where the logs need to be collected at roadside in the forest, and then they're delivered to the mill, they're sorted by size, they're debarked, they need to go through a wet mill, they produce into wet boards, and then they put into kilns to dry them off. They are then from there converted into lumber, and that lumber is sold as the end product, either to directly into the market space or into redistributors of the wood. So some of the salient features that have taken place at SAFCOL has been in the last, since 2009, the decision to privatize has been put on hold, and further feedback is awaited from the Department of Public Enterprises in this regard. What we have seen is that since the very good years of 2004 to 2008, demand for timber has not recovered back to those levels, and therefore trading conditions remain tough. And however, we are seeing marginal improvements, but we have not reached pre-crisis level. We've also ended a lot of the long-term contracts we've had for sale of wood, and now it's moved on to an auction system. And we've also changed our strategy where we have a deliver-to-mill strategy, as well as given extended credit terms to our customers in order to facilitate sales and reduce and to allow the business to grow. As of 31st March 2012, we have had no job losses at the organization, and there's been a huge effort with regard to cost to curtail them, considering the difficult trading conditions that we have seen. We have also cleared the wet deck inventories which were built up after the 2007-2008 very extensive fires that we have had, which destroyed a number of forestry plantations, and that wood now has finally been sold, which was sitting in inventory. SAFCOL and KLF are level 2 DE contributor, and we currently have 11 social compacts signed, and 5 of them were done in the 2011 financial year. Mm-hmm. In terms of governance, the SAF board was reconstituted and an induction was held. The subcommittees were restructured and were reduced from 4 to 3, and the 3 committees are the Human Resources and Remuneration Committee, Finance and Investment and Transaction Committee, and we've got an Audit and Risk Committee. We're currently in the process of implementing what the Social and Ethics Committee as per the new Companies Act requirements. We have tried to adopt Kingsley as far as possible, and we have updated the terms of reference for all our charters for the different subcommittees and for the board. We have also had an unqualified audit
opinion for the 2011 financial year. So if you just turn to the financial and commercial sustainability targets that have been in place as per the shareholders' compact, and we just look at what has been achieved in terms of the financial returns, the EBITDA to revenue on 31st March 2011 was a negative 3.7% versus a target of 3%, and this highlights the difficult trading conditions that were experienced by Safcol. And if you compare that in 2010, that target was not applicable. In terms of return on equity, again, below the target at minus 5% versus the target was 10%. And on credit worthiness, the gearing ratio is at 1.4%, well within the target which was set. On the working capital management, the current ratio is at 4.1, which is in line with the target that was put in place. In terms of 2011, as I mentioned, it was a very tough year, similar to 2010 as we've come out of the crisis. In terms of the huge cost-cutting initiatives that we've put in place, and we've also put in place an ERP project which is in order to facilitate efficiencies, etc. It's a cost in the short term, but however, it's an investment for the longer term so that the organization is on a much better footing going forward with one integrated system versus currently we've got a number of different systems which impact on performance and timely information, etc. In terms of, we have seen a huge increase in our working capital as a result of the trade receivables, and that relates to extended credit terms that we have provided to customers where it used to be around 30 days, they've gone up to 90 days for people to pay for purchases, and that's in order to facilitate sales. In 2011, our cash reserves were at about 100, at the end of the financial year, at 100 million. I am pleased to say that the cash reserves at present are far higher than that, and they have improved subsequent to the end of the financial year 2011. If you just look at some of the main drivers of what was happened, you can see in 2010 revenue was at a very low base, and in 2011 we had a substantial increase, but it was not enough to let the organization be in a very strong financial position. In terms of investment revenue, that's money which we receive from the minority interest that we hold in the partially privatized entities which took place, and that's some of the dividend income which comes in. So that numbers can be a little volatile. We saw a 50% almost decrease from 2010 to 2011. On the expenses side, you can see a lot of work was done to reduce expenses. From 210 million in 2010, we have managed to reduce it to 141 million to cater for the difficult trading environment. And, it took a lot of work, and we have achieved that without laying off any employees. I think that's a very important point to mention. I think that the other items there are self-explanatory. On the balance sheet, what we've seen is the biological asset decreased in 2011, mainly as a result of the fair value adjustments. I'll just highlight that the fair value adjustment can be quite a volatile number, and it does swing from year to year depending upon specific stuff such as fuel costs and wood prices, etc. So that number does move around, but over the years it more or less has been around the current level that you see of around plus minus 3 billion. The increase in intangible assets that we have experienced is mainly related to the ERP system that we have implemented, which is being currently in the execution phase, and the benefits of that will begin to flow from the 2013 financial year. And as I mentioned, inventory, we had the best DEX stock was fully sold by the end of the financial year, which reduced our inventory levels as well. And we received a refund from SARS as well, which helped in terms of strengthening the balance sheet. From a cash flow perspective, you can see in 2010 the organization utilized a large amount of cash. We were fortunate in 2000 and
sorry, that was in 2010, in 2011, for that to swing into a positive cash flow. And we also reduced our amount in investments in order to cater for the lower levels of cash flow. And you can see there was a 26 million decrease in the cash balance by the end of financial year 2011. Currently, the amounts, the percentage holdings in the privatized entities remain unchanged over since they were privatized. We hold 25% in Sierra Poca Forest, and the other ones at 16% have been constant as well. The value of the investment in 2011 has gone up to 295 million versus in 2010 at 239 million, and that's mainly as a result of those companies' book values increasing and our share of that being readjusted on our balance sheet. In terms of funding, we currently have a few facilities available to us, which puts us in a very strong position if the difficult trading conditions were to persist for another year or two. We've got a facility with Nedbank, which is a 100 million facility, which is currently unutilized. And we also have an asset-backed finance facility, which we have used a very small amount of less than 10%, which we've used for mostly funding of movable assets, such as vehicles, etc., and equipment. So in terms of the overall funding available to the group, we put 100 million in cash as of 31st July, and we had almost 150 million of funding available to us if required.
Next one. Thanks, Honorable Chair, Honorable members of the department. In terms of sustainable forest management, the largest asset of the group is its plantations forestry. It's worth about 3 billion, and it's important for the group to make sure that this asset is fairly well protected. We have signed an agreement with the department in terms of performance, and we are pleased to mention that both in terms of total gross stock area and hectares in soil log management, we have remained intact with that. And also important to note that our other competitors are moving away from soil log management into pulp, and we'll stick to the soil log rotation and we're feeding into the building market. The key issue also there is that forestry is highly regulated, and the legislations regarding the excisions or moving away from the streams and water areas is impacting and it's becoming a risk for loss of land in terms of the legislation. Also to highlight that the main risk of the business in terms of sustainable forest management is forest fires. This year we had early fires, and yesterday in the Highveld area we had fires. So it's very important that as a group we strengthen our fire management capabilities and manage the risk in terms of sustainable forest management. The other risk relates to issues of pests and diseases, which members will understand that the baboon problem is not only in Mpumalanga, but it's also in Cape Town. And in Mpumalanga, they are having a different sort of behavior wherein they strip the bark of the tree and they leave it like that. They don't even eat it for energy purposes. We're doing a lot of research to find out why the baboons will have such kind of a behavior. The other issue which remains a risk on sustainable forest management is the issue of resolving the current land claims. The group has got about 61% of the total land holding under land claims, and until such time that a suitable model is found of engaging and working together with the land claims, this becomes and remains a risk for the business. We're doing a few activities in terms of managing the fires, and both of course the baboon side. We've got a professor from Kitui City assisting us to do a study on the behavior. And on the fire side, we're rolling out awareness campaigns, and we're also trying to reduce what we call the fuel load underneath the compartments, where you've got more of the stuffs under the compartment, we burn them ourselves, control burning, so that when the fire comes in, we are at a better state. As I've mentioned, on the baboon side, we have people working on and also trying to see if they can remove some of the damage causing baboons. In 2011 financial year, we had about 59 eliminated or excised or killed away from the plantations, and that was after we have realized that in particular area, it was a plantation towards the Graskop area in Mpumalanga, we had about 70% of the damage in a compartment. So we'll plant hectares and 70% will be damaged. Then we engaged organization, including the green organizations, to find a solution, and at that time we were able to remove 51 of the baboons from the area. In terms of performance against target regarding developmental issues, we subscribe to the forestry charter, and we're proud to mention that we are leaders in the charter, having attained level 2, and the target was to get level 3, but we are level 2. And that we were able to achieve it through various initiatives. And part two, attainment of level 2, we had to also make sure that in our marketing practices, we increase participation of black participation in the market, and which we achieved in terms of the target. We also engaged, as already mentioned, we have signed 11 social compacts. Social compacts is an agreement between the organization and the groups of community represented by different representatives, including then claimants, including communities leaders, including people from municipalities as well from that level. So in those social compacts, we were spending in the region about 6 to 7, 8 million per annum. We have spent in 2011 6.3 million of the target of 7 million, and some of the money that was not spent at the time was due to rollover projects that were not completed when the year end finishes. And most of the projects that we engage on are infrastructural related projects for buildings and so forth. In terms of employment, we had in 2011 about 1,900 own employees, and of which 52 were fixed terms on the projects which were not long-term projects. And we've got to, as part of our plans, is to try and aggressively improve numbers in terms of disabilities and females within the industry. On females, we're standing at 20%, and disabled people with disabilities is about 16 people. This is just a highlight of the projects that we engage on. As I mentioned, that we're spending about 6.3 million. We spent that in 2011 financial year. Of that 6.3 million, as you can see, it varies from information centers to development of small businesses, infrastructures, early childhood development. Most of these finances are going through more establishment of infrastructures and buildings and so forth. I haven't got the pictures here, but I've got it in another areas where we build things like your schools, your halls, and areas that communities requested or demanded or wanted in terms of the social agreements that we have with them. Some of the highlights on the enterprise development is our partnership. We've got a memorandum of agreement with the Development Bank of South Africa. And through that MOU, we were able to initiate cooperatives, including the beekeeping, which was initiated by then. And I'm happy to say that the MOU has continued, we've renewed it, and we're continuing to establish businesses within rural areas with assistance of DBSA. We are also conducting, we've finished the pre-feasibility study on green energy, and we are now engaging ESCOM to see if we can utilize wood resources or timber resources in the generation of electricity. At this stage, we are in negotiation with them to look at the most probable mechanism to do that. That is after we've done a pre-feasibility that indicated that yes, indeed, we can use timber to generate green energy from biomass. We have established by then about four enterprise contractors. These are the people who form cooperatives, and out of the cooperatives, they attain work within the group, where we offer them between 3 years and 5 years contract, depending on what type of activities they will be doing. And one of the contractor, even before he finishes his term, was able to bid, and he was even stronger to bid in the competitors and do work for them, showing that indeed these enterprises were starting to be self-sustainable. Job creation at that time, of all the contracts that we had developed, was about 302, and that is just purely the ones that we ourselves helped in terms of funding, in terms of management, in terms of developing them to really be fully fledged contractors. And I think what is also important, that going forward as a group, we want to try and utilize our resources into building what we call timber frame structures. We have built one at Grabo, and the reason why we did the Grabo one was that already in that area, Safcon, under the other privatized entity MTO, they had an operation there, which some of the areas they had about, I can't remember the numbers of the build houses for workers, which lasted more than 20 years and still intact. So there was a level of acceptance of timber frame structures in the area. And further to that, we have now developed the concept in Mpumalanga area and in Limpopo area. We have built in the previous financial year, which is not part of this one, we have built a substantial amount of infrastructure through timber structures. And we were assisted very much so by the Deputy Minister, who was part of this project as we rolled it out in the other areas.
Honourable Chairperson and members of the committee, just to show you what the outlook is for us in terms of the financial and commercial sustainability KPIs for 2012, which has been complete the financial year as of 31st March 2012. You can see there's been a substantial improvement in our return. The EBITDA to revenue, now we've exceeded the FY12 target of 9%. However, the return on equity is still below the target. Gearing ratio still remains very low compared to what the maximum is. And on the current ratio, again, we remain quite favorably. And the company's cash reserves, despite them having risen, they also do continue to decline, because we have had cost items such as transport, etc., having increased quite substantially over the last few months with the high oil prices. The cash flow from operations still remains negative at 34 million for the FY12 year. But having said that, again, it hasn't dropped below the 2011 level. I think the key focus areas for 2012, number one, is the implementation of the corporate plan, and to continue with the business turnaround process that has been going on for the last 18 months, as well as filling key positions that are still vacant within the organization. The other big item of focus will be to properly implement the ERP system. We're at the early stages, and the real benefits will flow in the months to come. We'd also like to continue focusing on improved productivity, as well as focusing on the socio-economic program that we have had, and Leslie has alluded to earlier. And we would like to further improve the BE status of the organization, and we will dedicate more time and resources to make sure that comes about. Another key issue for the organization to proceed and able to effectively grow going forward is the resolution of the land claims, which currently is still on an ongoing process. The key risks to the organization continue to remain the fires that will be entering the fire season now, and that continues to be a key risk, as well as the baboon damage, as well as one of the other key issues for us is the loss of skills, is to make sure that the organization is on a strong footing and a certainty, so that we retain the skills within the organization and do not lose key individuals. As a result of the privatization process, there's a large claim against SAFCO to the amount of plus minus 3.2 billion regarding the non-completion of the privatization process, but the case has not been set down and it continues to be an ongoing item at this point in time. Just to mention that 61% of the land at SAFCO is under land claims, which is quite a significant amount, and it does at this stage limit our ability to take longer term decisions until there is clarification or resolution to the land claims process. The financials of the organization are not sustainable, and therefore it's important, and it ties into the entire strategizing of how we want to position the organization and going forward in terms of industrialization, and how can we insist in further creating employment, which is a key policy of very large employers of people, and if we can grow this particular business, there's huge opportunity to further create employment, which is one of the key objectives of the shareholder as well. I'd like to thank the Honorable Chairperson as well as the Honorable Members of the Committee as well as the Department of Public Enterprises for providing us with the opportunity to present this update on SAFCO's 2011 financial year, and we are free to take questions.
Thank you very much for the presentation. Even though the baboons really make your life very, very difficult and miserable, but I hope there will be some, you know, a way of dealing with this. Honorable members, Honorable Sibande, followed by Honorable DPA, Honorable Grunewald, Honorable Jacob, in that order.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, before I ask question, allow me to comment something about the source of the baboons. It reminds me in Mpumalanga where we are coming from. It happened sometimes ago in Swaziland. There was a storm, a cyclone, and the people donated millions of rands. And then when somebody is supposed to account, he said, "Imani idliwe magungwane." It means that the man was eaten by the mice. To me, I'm very suspicious with this. If it was urgent, I was going to suggest that we go and do an oversight. Because 70% compartments, underline 70% eaten by how many baboon a day? If it's 70% out of 100. It raises an alarm. It's too much. I don't say that baboons are friendly, user-friendly. You know that they do what to do. But to, you know, like that's the bark, just actually open it and not eating at ever. The baboon is very cruel in terms of crops because they eat. But with this one, it's unfortunately, ma'am. Then come to the question. My question will be as follows. Number one, I really don't know whether do you have a risk management. Why I'm raising this thing? If so, why the group went to a huge amount of debt? I'll come with the amount of debt. For an example, SAFCOAL suffered a loss of 103 million before tax. And if you can take us on board, that what caused that of the above-mentioned challenge, and why the challenge was left to continue so long. And number two, there wasn't an allegation that there wasn't a disgruntled land And lastly, which is my worry, with that, that one, the loss of 103 million rand. In slide number 6, if I'm not mistaken. No, it's not slide number 6, it's the baboon ones. There is a slide which is speaking about finances. I'm not sure about the slide. If you can help me, where you spoke about the 100.6 million rand, which is you saved. You see, I'm checking that the money which you have borrowed, which slide? Borrowed money. The slide. I wanted to raise something over the slide.
I think it's slide 16, honorable member.
Slide 16.
Yes.
Help me now. Which page is slide 16? Page 16. Oh, sorry. Page 3. 5.5, okay. Yes. You see, my argument there, man. If you... Yes. Thank you very much. If you check in this timetable, they are saying investment and cash on resources, it's 100.6 million. But somewhere they are suffering the loss of 103 million before tax. This site is an investment. This site they are suffering that loss. So that to me it's a contradiction on what is there. If they may clarify us that what is the problem, where is the problem? Why is it going so long? Because the risk management are the ones who are supposed to alert you that hey, there is danger. Thank you, Mama. I'll come. There are a lot of questions, but let me give other members a chance to ask questions. But baboons, you must go there.
Sorry, Chair. I think my colleague doesn't need to go so far to see baboons. He must go to Gordon Page. He'll see a lot of it. Chair. First of all, I think we need to congratulate this entity for where they are coming from and where they are in terms of their financial situation, except for 2010. You could see there is a relative improvement. And we must congratulate them for the direction where they are taking the entity. The chairperson, I heard the presenter said that 60% of their land are underclaimed. I just want to check where, at which stage is this claim? Because it's, and they're saying they're struggling with this because of the model. And I fail to understand because there should not be difficulties dealing with the claim because there is something called intergovernmental departments, where you speak with your counterpart in another department if you want to fast track. Except if it has to do with the beneficiaries which can't be found there, or those resources which is always raised by the land claim commission. The other thing, Chairperson, I saw that one of the challenges which they are putting in front of us is a challenge where the organized union are being responsible for damaging a damage of 100 million rand of putting fire on the field. But I'm just thinking, less than 6 months ago, the High Court, the Cape Town High Court had a verdict in the case between the city of Cape Town and Samo. What does that mean for them in terms of getting their money back, the damage which was made through this protest? The other one, Chairperson, is on the job creation. I heard a number of 302 for a year in forestry. It doesn't make sense because forestry is supposed to be a labor-intensive program, and if the target rate 300, for me is above average. There must be more. Or I don't know if I understood them correct. Is their job creation the number of subcontractors being employed in the institution, or is it the total labor force in the institution which is provided? Chairperson, also on the issue of skills, I think their FITA is called FITA. Raise the issue of technical skills and managerial skills, and the shortage of it in the sector. So I want to know what extraordinary measures are used to attract and retain, because I don't hear it comes out. They just flag it in the report. Or is that the reason why you have so many strikes in terms of the damages? You don't pay your people properly or not? The other one is that 20% women in the broader organization, your equity, 20% women, 16 with disability. What does this disability represent in terms of a percentage? What does it represent? Because it can be even less than 0.01. That's why I think the approach was to give us a number of 16 and then saying what does it reflect in the whole institution. Let me stop there.
Thank you, Chairperson. I will be short. Maybe I missed it. If you can just indicate to us how many land belongs to SAFCOM at this stage, if you can help us with per province as well. And then I also want to know what happened to the land and forest if the land claims are successful. There is forestry on the land. What happened to that? Is it going to the claimants, or is it still belongs to SAFCOM? Thank you.
Yeah, in the presentation, presenters said there's established cooperatives. Could we just try to understand in which areas are these cooperatives? And on the issue of problems, you talked about killing. What kind of killing are you doing to minimize the damage that is being caused by the baboons? And the other one, maybe I don't know whether you tried to interact maybe with scientists which can maybe try to come up with an insecticide when you spray it. It can repel the baboons. I'm just thinking aloud. If maybe you've tried that. Thanks.
Thank you very much. After the strikers were allegedly reported being responsible for setting the fires, 100 fires. At plantation in three provinces. What were the disputes about? And why did the disputes turn violent? And what has been done to prevent this type of situation from occurring in the future? And what is the outcome of this dispute? And adding on the one of the cooperative. Like we were saying, we need this information per province. Can you be specific and tell us in this province, Mpumalanga, so many cooperatives? And even if possible, we need to know where the area is in Mpumalanga, Sabi, or in Mpumalanga, Free State, Limpopo,
If you don't have that information now, we will request it. We'll send the information to us. And the awareness campaign. You know, we are from this province. we represent provinces. When we talk of Graskop, I understand where Graskop is situated. But you know, it's amazing. You are out there. You know that there is public enterprises, and you know that there are committees in Parliament. You only sit there and await for us to invite you to come. But there is no communication to say there will be this at a particular time in a particular area. Can members come and join us so that we witness what is happening around us? Definitely, it's not that you don't know that there are members of Parliament serving in these committees. That's why you are here today. So I think from today, you'll be able to, you don't have to wait. Each and every activity that is happening in Singapore, you must know that there is this National Council of Provinces. Communicate with us so that, you know, we don't, when you come here, we don't ask you questions that we could have assisted maybe before things even happened. Can you respond? Whilst you're still, preparing who can, the cooperatives, you must tell us, in this cooperative, so many women are there. That's why I'm saying, if you don't have it, you'll send it. Because we want
the details.
Honorable Chairman, while you're on the cooperatives, let me just highlight what we have here, and I just want to also emphasize that the information we have here it's updated until now, so it's not only for the 2011 financial year. If you look at the screen there, on the far left, these are the forestry contractors, including some of them which we engage them as co-ops. You can see cooperatives, some of them is just purely companies we've initiated. And the second column talks of the type of the work that these people are providing or the services that they're providing. And the next column talks about number of employments. And I want to also answer that one that was 306 at 2011. It has grown to 214. This is purely the ones that we deal with on forestry enterprise development. It's not the jobs. You see, there's a lot of activities that will create jobs. But what we are measuring here is, we have established a cooperative, we've established a company, we've given it a service to provide us with a service, and it's got so much number of people. And that's what we have. In terms of the level of breaking down into provinces, we haven't done into further details of Gauteng, municipality or whatever it is, but if you can look at it, the top ones is Limpopo, and the other ones, you can, there's a number of provinces and cooperatives where we've formed cooperatives. Some of these work, they require highly skilled activities like your cable yard thinnings. It's really high technology cable yards to bring the logs down from the mountainous areas, and we've got to take them through. And we're just happy that some of these guys are now moving away from depending on us and having to bid for other companies and doing jobs there, meaning that they're getting more sustainable. We will see how to incorporate the women in this, and we'll try and see if we can have a list of whether this is women or it's not women owned. We'll provide it at this stage. I'm not sure very much in terms of the cooperatives that we have.
Maybe just to add on to that, I think there was a previous another question from one of the honourable members regarding the TN2 jobs created. Again, these jobs are outside SAFCOL and it does not sit on SAFCOL's register of employees. So just to clear up that these are the social initiatives that have been in, that have been engaged or have been started regarding the, yes, policy is very, very labor intensive. Having said that, in this current environment, with reduced demand compared to the period between 2003 and 2008, SAFCOL has not, there isn't demand for extra wood, and therefore it's difficult for us to employ people at this point in time in terms of on the SAFCOL labor register. So I think that's just to clear up. So the 302 that we refer to here is more outside of all of the social, the social initiatives that the organization has undertaken.
Yeah. Coming back to the there's quite a few questions on the baboons. Maybe just to clarify, I think the 70% that they referred to in one compartment is, you must remember, SAFCOL have got 120,000 hectares of forest under management. One compartment, we were trying to illustrate how severe it could be. It's obviously not in all forests that we've got 70% damage, but in this one where the troop was quite large, etc., the damage that was done was quite severe. So what we're trying to highlight is that how severe it can get if we don't start managing the challenge that we have from now. On average, it's not 70% in all the compartments, etc.
In terms of our risk management, we can only institute the killing when a certain percentage has been reached. And in other words, even the green organization, as big as NSPCSA and WWF, they are engaged on these things. And the group in Cape Town travel all the way to Mpumalanga to attend some of these stakeholder meetings. The group called Baboon Matters, they are in Cape Town here. They fly all the way to Mpumalanga to attend these meetings. So we are supposed to, when a compartment has reached a certain percentage, we do assessment on an annual basis. When it has reached a certain limit, let's say 70%, then we say risk-wise is not sustainable. We've got to control the animals. And the killing method that we use, we are an FSC, Forestry Stewardship Council certified. Our certification with FSC says that we've got to deal with the issues of social issues, including labor issues, environmental issues, including baboon issues, and commercial issues and certain issues. They measure us on that. If we do any killing outside the principles of FSC, we may lose our certificate in terms of the law. So what we have done there is that we have instituted what we call baboon damage working group, and we've got a protocol on killing those baboons. And in terms of the protocol, we put cages, we put them in the cages, we either relocate or either kill them. It depends on the modalities at the time that we are having in. Some of them were literally killed. Some of them were not killed, were released. Some. So I think there's a lot of modalities that goes with in terms of the protocol that is used, which is see, we've got NSPSA, we've got a woman like a PACS board sitting in this kind of meeting to try and assist us in terms of the processes and protocols.
Then maybe just starting up from the top with the first question with regard to risk management, I think the organization has a, in part of the audit committee is a, forms the risk element comes under the audit and risk committee. We have a comprehensive risk process. It's constantly being improved and refined, and which constantly highlights to us what are the main risks within the organization, etc. So the risk management is part of the culture of the organization, and is an ongoing process. And committee members, the non-executive directors plus the executive directors, spend a large amount of time managing risk as well as trying to improve how do we cope with the risk and reduce risk within the organization. Coming back to the loss of 103 million, if one looks at the presentation,
just go to slide. Yes. No, slide 12. Go on.
Now, I just think I want to highlight, here's the 103 million loss before taxation that one sees. Now, if one looks at the
two lines above, there's a line I think they call fair value adjustments, right? So that fair value adjustment is not a cash item. For accounting purposes, it's a non-cash item. So one has to remove that amount to get what was the true cash sort of loss. But again, the number here as well has to be adjusted for working capital, etc., and other items such as depreciation, etc. But the 103 million does not translate directly into a loss in the bank account because of the non-cash items on the income statement. So if one goes back to the funding slide, just put it back here. You can see at the bottom there we say there's investment in cash of 100.6 million. So that, as at the year end, the 31st March 2011, we have 100 million of cash, in inverted commas, in the bank, sitting in the bank. The other amounts of the 155 million that you see, those are funding facilities. In other words, if we needed extra money because our 100 million of cash were to be used up, for example, then we could draw on those other facilities. So what I'm pointing to do is the 100.6 million of cash doesn't have necessarily mean there's a discrepancy between what the income statement is showing and what the bank account is showing. I think that's just important to emphasize that the organization has got funding for itself and it has made losses, but not all of those are cash losses. And I think that's the most important one I want to emphasize, cash losses.
If you look at the cash flow overview, I think that's where you see that actually, I think it's like 14, two more above. Yeah, just go down. Another one. Yes, you can actually see what was the sort of, let's go down again. Yeah, the cash flow statement, that's actually where you see the movement in the cash balance. In cash reserves. Actually, see, in that year, they made money from the operations, which is about five million, and the only cash outflow was from investing activities. So actually, in that specific year, in terms of cash-wise, they actually improved their cash activities compared to the previous financial year.
There was a question on the disgruntled claimants and their threats to the operation. I think in the financial, I'm not very sure, the financial year 2010 or 2011, we had claimants marching to our Vet Club plantation, which is found very close to White River. This was an incident which was instigated by the fact that the land claims process is not slow. It's actually extremely slow, resulting in claimants being unhappy and disgruntled. Members will understand that land claims are registered in terms of the Land Claims Act, Restitution Act, and also the Extension of Land Tenure Act, and also the Labor Tenants Act. So all this legislation, in our plantation, there are claims that are under Labor Tenants Act. Other ones are under Accession of Land Rights Act. Others are under the Labor Tenants and Restitution Act. So there's conflict within this act that sometimes you find that a particular chief will claim in terms of extra rights. And he finds that already certain members of the community has lodged a claim in terms of the Restitution Act. And I've got a particular incident where seven out of the 31 claims in Limpopo I've gone to the High Court because of that and gone back to the court because of that. There's court papers and it can't be resolved. The reason being that the two legislations of government are at play, Extension of Land Tenure Act and Restitution Act. The chief comes with the Extension of Land Tenure Act and the claimant under the chief comes with the Restitution of Land Claims Act. The particular one in Mpumalanga was purely because of slow process. They even put in their memorandums that they're unhappy with the slow process and they're going to burn these plantations and so forth. So what we did, we had engagement with the Regional Land Claims Commissioner. We called in the parties involved, we met with them and we explained the process, and we asked the commissioner that on a regular basis it is important that these people are kept abreast of where their claim is. In terms of the claims and the stages, I just want to show the members exactly what we have now as we stand in terms of the land claims, which I just want to show it here on the screen. If we look at the screen, we have a total of 31 claims. In 2011, we had 29 claims in total. Now they've grown up from 2011 to currently, as we're speaking today, we've got three more claims that have been included in our properties. And out of these 31 claims, 13 are under research, 18 are already gazetted, 3 are tend to be settled, waiting for a settlement agreement, and only one is transferred. And I just want to highlight the province-wise, the majority of the claims are in Mpumalanga, and that is also the majority of the area where only 4 attempt to be gazetted. So in Mpumalanga, we've got a slight challenge in that only 12 of the 18 are still in research. And being in research, as stipulated here in this document, as part of the Land Claims Commissioner, so the what they're doing in research, they're doing mapping, local inspection, oral research, interviewing people, getting archived documents and so forth. That's the sort of stage that it is in, and it's still in very, very, very early stages. Even you will see if you look at the figures here on this slide, most of the claims under research will have unknown estimations in terms of hectares. Even if these hectares are given here, they can change any time. When they do the research, they may find that actually this land must be included, this land must be excluded. So we've got a slightly bigger challenge in terms of land claims. And there was a question again of saying which claims are in Mpumalanga, which in Limpopo. I've highlighted there, even in terms of our plantation names, to say this plantation, Belfast, Berlin, Jesse Vale, Nels Wachter, Wetclap, Rubonia, they fall under Mpumalanga, and there's other ones in Limpopo, which is more especially the majority of the claims in Limpopo are in one plantation, which is Ntabeni, which is found in Livubu areas and Toyandu, those areas in Venda. It's about 13 claims, and out of those 13 claims, the 7 ones are stagnant because of the court case. It's just a lot of challenges that we cannot resolve. And I want to also highlight that in these claims that are on the screen here, all of it is under the state land, which is under Department of Public Works, being given rights to Department of Agriculture, Forests and Fisheries, and SAFCOL only leases the land there. The only claims that SAFCOL has rights and they are owners of is part of the claims in KZN, which borders in the Ngome plantation towards Nongoma, and one claim in Mpumalanga, which was settled this year in May and fully transferred to the communities by the minister himself. I think it's about 12,000 hectares which was fully transferred, and this is purely because this land rests within the title deed. It's SAFCOL title deed, it's not the state title deed. So the issues of vesting of land rights and other processes within the state land does take a little bit of time, and that is the reason why most of the claimants becomes disgruntled and the process becomes just too long for them. Just the other question on the issue of the strike. The matters reported, and I remember very well, it's Business Day, of the allegations of strikers being liable for 100 million hectares. It was reported by journalists, I think it's Ayanda Mbulu or something, I can't remember the detail of the name. What has happened actually is that the SAFCOL engages the union with recognized rights for bargaining for employees' salary increase, and that process was initiated much earlier during the year, where FAU is the union representing about 1,400 employees. The FAU members, as they have demanded 18% wage increase, and the company was offering up to, in terms of the bargaining process, we got stuck when they were at 13%. They said they're going to down to the 13%, and the company has moved to 8%. That 8% was considered above others, you know, including the settlement that government had in other similar industries and other SOEs. And when we deadlocked at 8 and 13%, they decided to down tool. When we downed tool, management built up the negotiation processes, and when we were negotiating, there was a possibility of settling it at 8.5%, which they deemed unacceptable. And unfortunately, during the process, there was allegations as reported of fires, which, not allegations of fires, there were fires which were alleged to be started by the union members. There were incidents where about 7 people were arrested by police through helicopter, who were found to be having things that could have ignited the fire, like parasites and things like that. And also, there was an incident, and it's a very unfortunate incident, that SAFCO lost an employee who was on the fire belt fighting fires. It is alleged that the employees at the time had a heart attack or some sort and couldn't do much. And in that process, also allegations were rife that there was an ambulance going to salvage that particular employee, which couldn't pass because of barricading roads and things like that. So these allegations remain allegations until proven, and we will follow the due process. And I think I just want to highlight that with these fires, the most important issue, and which is a risk issue, is if there's a fire on the third party, meaning that if there's a fire that arises from SAFCOL fire to another property, SAFCOL will be liable for that. And in terms of SAFCOL processes, we have tried we spend a lot of money on aerial fighting to quench the fire, stop the fire. We got additional capacity. Unfortunately, some of the additional capacity on the ground were intimidated by striking workers. We had an incident of one of our employees being beaten to hospital because of striking workers. We've got incident of an employee locked in and so forth. So those incidents are being followed up by the police, and we will wait the investigation process on that matter and take it forward. Okay. On the question of the shortage of skills, this is not affecting only SAFCOL. It does affect the industry. SAFCOL has been proactive, and we are funding a forestry chair, which is established at the Pretoria University. And through that forestry chair, we already, as I speak, we have got about 5 or 6 master's students, and all of them from disadvantaged communities, who we are trying to improve their skills, and we've got to also compete with the other industry players in terms of not only training them but also retaining them. It remains a challenge for the group. In terms of the 20% women, I want to highlight that in the past, forestry was really male-dominated industry, if I can put it that. We have established what we call a transformation forum. Through that transformation forum, and I'm sure this we are going to go even public on it, we instigated up to till we are the first forestry company in South Africa to appoint a women forester. A woman plantation manager. So she has been appointed this year, and we were trying to really even change systems and processes to accommodate that. We are at still very low. We acknowledge that the 20% is low, but that's a challenge of the past that we are with. And also the issue of the percentage on disabled, yes, is still below the target. The nature of the industry, working in forestry is not easy to accommodate that, but we're doing our best to try and improve the disability. It's still below the required target, I must say.
Okay.
Chair, just to add to that, one has to appreciate as well that to get the numbers up, one needs to be employing. And at this stage, considering the constraints of the organization, that hasn't been happening. So once the organization starts to re-go back into the labor market, there will be an active bias towards making sure we get those numbers to increase, especially on the disability side as well as on the mix of women employees to male.
Just the last one on the invitation to be made to the committee. Chair, we will take details and engage. There are other committees that have members like Honorable Sibande, who's in the provinces, and other people. But we will make the contacts. We'll try and work through our liaison office from the department, DP liaison office, so that we can also not only invite but also look at the progress. Sometimes we're doing events and the parliament is sitting and so forth and so forth. We'll do our best. We've got some members that we invite already, and I can remember of another member from another committee, not from this committee, I think Honorable Hololo or something like that. So we'll try and make efforts. It might not be that perhaps we can be able to invite in everything, but we'll try.
Because we have to invite a member, then that means you are aware of, you know, so we don't want to get into argument. Honorable members, Honorable Sibande.
Yes, ma'am. You see, Chairperson, let me come back to my argument, which I've raised earlier on. I think it's still outstanding. If you check on page 13, on income, statement overview, 5.1, against the statement, which is page 17, funding and borrowing level. You see, myself, I'm not satisfied about the response. The reason is that coincidentally, underline my argument, coincidentally, the figures are nearly the same about loss before the transaction, then also about the funding available. You see, to me it's impossible. It's impossible. Because if you check well, you know, I don't say that it can't happen, but it's very rare that what you have lost, that's what you got at the same time as your profit. Yeah. I'll leave it there. But the other thing, I'm happy to hear the explanation about the baboons, because I had a serious argument of it, because you have already explained that you mean the portion. Because I'm from Mpumalanga, my colleagues is not aware that I'm from close to Kruger National Park, where there are really things happening, not these 2, 3, 4 baboons you saw here in Western Cape. Actually, these are not really originally baboons, some of them, you know, you can see. I'm from the rainy places of the baboon, but the damage, yes, I agree, but yes, let's leave it at this moment. We'll see when we're taking an oversight visit. But the explanation is still outstanding, ma'am, about the issue of the money. Thanks.
Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Member, I think one except the page slide 12, where there's 103 million, as I indicated, that I think the Honorable Member's query is, how is it possible that you have a loss and still have cash, if I understand him correctly? Now, as I said, the loss here is on the income statement. Does not necessarily mean it has to be a loss on the balance on the cash flow statement, or in other words, in the cash balance. There's a difference between the two. This loss of 103 million, for example, if one looks at the fair value adjustment of 34 million, that's not a cash item. So even though it's coming off your profit, it's not coming off your cash. So your cash still stays the same, even though when one goes from the 141 million to the 34, it's still there. So there's a difference between what's cash and what's the income statement, profit and loss. So even though the numbers look very close, they're unrelated in terms of, if I have 100 million loss, it means I must have my balance, that means I must have 100 million of debt. It doesn't work that way. So, I mean, I'm not sure how I can explain this more simply, but there's non-cash items which are in the income statement, whereas the cash balance is the money we have in the bank based upon what's generated.
If there are no more questions, members, but I still say we will still interact with you, with SAFCOM, because definitely we want to see for ourselves as a committee whether there is job creation or job losses. Even the schools that you say you have assisted, we want the list of those schools because they are in our provinces and in our constituencies. So when I visit Mtimba, I must be able to say this is from SAFCOM. Can we now read the report? Honourable members, the report reads: the report of the Select Committee on Labour and Public Enterprises on the report and financial statement of the South African Forestry Company Limited, SAFCOM, for 2010-2011, including the report of the independent auditors on the financial statements for 2010-2011, dated 8 August 2012. The Select Committee on Labour and Public Enterprises, having considered the report and financial statements of the South African Forestry Company Limited, SAFCOM, for 2010-2011, including the report of the independent auditors on the financial statements of 2010-2011, reports that it has concluded its deliberations thereof. Any mover, member? Honorable Grunewald, seconded by Honorable Mabija. Thank you very much. We will still, from now on, there must be communication. Thank you very much. You can be, for now you can be released. Can I have more? Thank you very much for coming. We will interact. On our agenda is the minutes. But when I look at this minute, let's leave the minute. Honorable members, we've got the report of We have the report. We have the report of the Select Committee on Labour and Public Enterprises. We did the other time. Thank you, Mandiwa. We did. Interact with the Department of Labour on the report of the financial statement. So can I read the report, honourable members? Yeah, it was that meeting that was honourable Sibanda was chairing, and when you were supposed to adopt, then the quorum wasn't there. Now that we have the quorum, can I read the report, honourable members? Report of the Select Committee on Labour and Public Enterprises on the report and financial statement of the Department of Labour, vote 17 for 2010-11, including the report of the Auditor General of, on the financial statements and performance information for 2010-11 and the report of the Auditor General on the financial statement and performance information of the Sheltered Employment Factories for 2010-11 dated 8 August 2012. That the Select Committee on Labour and Public Enterprises, having considered the report and financial statements of the Department of Labour, vote 17 for 2010-11, including the report of the Auditor General on the financial statements and performance information for 2010-11, and the report of the Auditor General on the financial statements and performance information of the Sheltered Employment Factories for 2010-11, RP 117-2011, referred to it, reports that it has concluded its deliberations thereon. Any mover? Honorable GPS, supported by Honorable Brunabout. Thank you, Honorable Members. We have the UIF. The other one is the UIF of the Department of Labor. A report of the Select Committee on Labor and Public Enterprise on the report and financial statement of Unemployment Insurance Fund for 2010-2011, including the report of the independent auditors on the financial statements and performance information for 2010-11, RP 231 of 2011, dated 8 August 2012. That the Select Committee on Labor and Public Enterprises, having considered the report and financial statements of Unemployment Insurance Fund, UIF, for 2010-11, including the report of the independent auditors on the financial statements and performance information for 2010-11, RP 231 of 2011, referred to it, reports that it has concluded its deliberation thereon. Any mover? Honorable Dubier, Honorable Mabi, just a point. Honorable members, we've got the minutes, but if I look at the minutes, I think we need to get the minutes that are corrected, because if we look in the minutes, in the minutes, so we won't go through the minutes. Let the secretary of the committee go and correct the minutes, and then we will look at them in our next meeting. Honorable members, thank you very much. Enjoy your Women's Day celebration. I hope you attend the event, the women, and you treat your partners with dignity during this month. Let me just say that again.
I'm inviting Lodi.
My name is Chen.